Why do I conduct my show on this manner? Mundo!
Sweet mother of God, what is the holdup?
Eleanor!
Once again, something wonderful in my life has been turned into a giant crap fest.
Mundo!
Got a little bit more cock for you here.
Eleanor!
Bowtie boy got the big snaggeroonie.
Mundo!
Oh, six of my nipples are tingling.
Eleanor!
See why America loves him so much?
Mundo!
I'd like to smash you in the face with my shillelagh.
Eleanor!
I have no idea what's going on.
Mundo!
He was lying.
He said he never tells a lie.
He was lying when he said that.
Eleanor!
I want a cup.
Well, could you spell that?
C-U-P. I want to see you. Oh, my God.
I know nothing.
Think stomach batteries to power. Turbines to speed.
For God's sake, strap yourself down.
That's right, it's the show your bosses don't want you to listen to, the show that's going to tell you the truth about how corporate power is turning the American dream into the impossible dream for the working person, the show that rattles the left-wing limousine liberals who sit on their high horses while the working class fights their battles for them, and the show that loves to point out how the so-called professional media is selling us down the river by not reporting the news. It's the Cup of Joe radio show. I'm your not-so-humble host, Joe Avecchio, voice of the working man, voice of the radical middle, voice of those who have been unvoiced by the anti-worker policies of the Bush administration and its corporate allies. Our engineer, Sock Puppet Sam, is here.
Quack.
And we've got a lot of stuff to talk about this show. But first, Sam, give us the URL for the site.
That's cupojoe.blogspot.com.
And the email address.
joevec@bellsouth.net.
Okay, and I want to thank all my fans listening in at the White Rose Society, my good friend Ben Birch, hosting my archives there. Also, my friends at rantradio.com, tuning in on Mondays and Thursdays. My friends at WNYmedia.net out of upstate New York, and everyone listening in from the blog or from their iPods. Okay, and before I do anything else, let me give a few shout-outs. First, I want to give a big shout-out to Bob Kincaid of Head On Radio, because he is the first one to be playing my new Cup of Joe reports, which will be, they're daily things, little two-minute segments. They're available, and hell, the website's too complicated. Just go on the blog. You know the blog, cupojoe.blogspot.com, and go down to the post that's entitled Cup of Joe Report, and I'll just have the link up there pretty soon. I got to throw it together. I've been a little busy lately doing stuff, and I'll get to that in a minute. But I want to give a big shout out to Bob Kincaid for doing that, and he gave me a nice little what's the word? He said some nice things about me on the show. He called me a radio pro. Man, if only he knew. This is my bedroom, man. I got a little mixer and a studio in the bedroom, and that's it. I'd also like to welcome back the people who listen to rantradio.com. Apparently, and because of everything that happened with my wife and all this other stuff, I wasn't able to keep up with getting the shows out to Rant Radio. So apparently they were playing the same old two shows over and over again for the last, God, since like August, I guess. So that's really been a long time, and nobody really noticed. At least nobody emailed me and said, hey, Joe, how come you're doing the same show? And nobody really noticed. Well, you know, Rant Radio is pretty cool. I get about maybe, I guess, between 15 and 20 listeners regularly. It's nice to be on something regular like that, but you know, it just doesn't reach a huge audience, but that's okay. You know, I like Rant Radio, I like Sim, and I like Smokehouse and all those people over there, and they're a cool group of people, and I'm happy that they have me on their network. Let's see, what else is going on? Oh, well, obviously, if you've read the blog, you know that I found me some work, and it's not much. It's a part-time job at a pizza place. Answering the phones, doing some basic inside work. $6 an hour, about 25 hours a week. Yeah, it's not a lot. It'll be enough barely to take care of rent and bills and things like that, barely. I should be able to keep my food stamps. If I do, then I should be okay for a little while I find something else. I've got some other pans in the fire, as it were. I really don't like using silly terms like that, but I don't know what else to say. I've got some other job opportunities that hopefully will pan out. They won't pay. None of them will pay as much as what I was making over at Siemens, but I really don't require a lot. I'm a very low overhead kind of guy. You know, I really am. Very low overhead kind of person. I don't really need a lot to live on. The other day I went shopping, and what did I buy? I bought a bunch of chicken bouillon cubes. Certain type. They're not expensive. It's like 49 cents for a little box, and each box contains, I think, eight bouillon cubes. Each can be used for 2 cups of water, and I use that in conjunction with the turkey I made in Thanksgiving, and when I make chicken, I take the breast and I tear it up. I'm a cook. I'm an Italian guy. I'm a cook. And this is why I talk about sometimes I'm the anti-guy. I'm a show I talk about being, you know, blog of the working man, blah, 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 show of the working man. And I am a regular working guy. But I'm not really like the traditional image of the working guy in the sense that I like to come home and drink beer and you know, belch and stuff like that. I do belch and I do like to watch TV. But I don't drink beer. I don't do drugs. And I don't, while I don't chide people for doing that, I don't think it's as big a deal as everybody makes it out to be. I don't treat women like property. I loved my wife, and I treated her very nice while she was around, and there was very little of that whole sexist sort of thing that a lot of real guys, quote-unquote, try to do. But I'm happy. I do okay. And I like to cook. I enjoy cooking. I don't like cleaning up, but I don't have any choice because it's just me now. I had a decent Thanksgiving. I hope everybody had a good Thanksgiving. I know it's a little late. It's about a week past it. I did cook an entire turkey. I cooked about a 15-pound bird. No, it wasn't that much. It was 13 pounds. It doesn't matter. Why am I getting it? Why do I do that? But I cooked a little bird and with some potatoes. I didn't make any dressing. All I did was get stovetop stuffing anyway, but I didn't want to overdo it. And I made the turkey, and I made some potatoes, and that's basically what I had. And I had plenty of leftover, so I used that to make some soup and just to have as leftovers with gravy and rice. I like to take either chicken or turkey is good for that. You take it and you break it up and you nuke it with some chicken gravy. I use Campbell's chicken gravy. It used to be Franco-American chicken gravy, but I use that. I really like that. It's got a good flavor to it. And I take 1 cup of rice, and I make 1 cup of rice, and I mix it all in together so it's like a big pot pie without the pot. And it tastes great. I love that. Add some salt. Add some carrots and peas if you want, but I just like it with the chicken and the rice and the gravy, or the turkey in this case. So it makes a nice meal. And I actually got some company. Now, you know, I'm an agnostic, and I'm going to stick with my agnosticism because I believe in the power of doubt, so to speak, or at least I believe that doubt is important because I think I don't like certainties one way or the other. That's why I'm not an atheist as opposed to an agnostic. That's why I'm not an atheist. It's because there's always a little bit of room for me there. But I believe that Kathy kind of sent me a little gift on Thanksgiving, because I was going to be alone, and if I'd had a car, I might have gone up to visit with the kids or somebody else or done something somewhere, but I didn't, and I wasn't going to be much company anyway. So I just sat home, and I cooked the turkey, like I said, and we have this little neighborhood cat named Roscoe, and he's not a stray. He does belong to somebody. He's got a collar and everything. Very clean, very nice cat, very friendly. Always comes when you call it, which can be dangerous. If the owner lets it out and about, which the owner does every now and then. But he came over. I hadn't seen him in a long time, not since before Kathy went into the hospital, actually. I hadn't seen him in a long time, and he came over on Thanksgiving. And I guess they didn't want him hanging around the house while they were cooking the turkey. God knows you don't want a cat jumping into your food all the time, and that's one of the reasons why I don't have a cat. I prefer fish myself. But at any rate, Roscoe came over, And he kept me company for a few hours, and he left just before the food was ready, which is fine by me because, again, I don't really like cats sniffing all over my food while I'm trying to eat it. I know some people like that. But at any rate, I went out, and I just had a real nice time on Thanksgiving, just very quiet. And Roscoe slept a little on the bed, and I petted him and, you know, kept him company, and he, you know, sat on my lap for a while. So thank you, Kathy, for sending me that. for that gift for Thanksgiving. It was real nice to know that I'm not going to be alone. I don't know what I'm going to do for Christmas. If anybody has any ideas, please feel free to let me know. I'm probably, you know, to be perfectly honest, though, I'm probably not going to be very good company over Christmas. My wife really, really loved Christmas. It was her favorite holiday, and she used to wear Santa hat, and she loved having a big tree and all that. We really couldn't have a big tree, but we got a little tree, and I put it up here on my headboard. So I went out the Friday after Thanksgiving to look for work, and I had been looking for work for a while, and I didn't get a whole heck of a lot on Friday, and it gets very, very discouraging. But I went out again on Monday or Tuesday, I forget the day, and I just went down. I took the bus from where I live, and I took it in the opposite direction where I usually take it. I usually take it in the direction just to go to the train station and take the train. And in this case, I took it in the other direction where it goes towards Lithonia. It's the number 115 bus. Comes out of Kensington Station here in Atlanta. You don't need that much detail, but screw it. It's my show. I'm telling you anyway. And I stopped off at every little shopping center, every little place that they had there, and just had some resumes. I got dressed up in my gray suit. Shirt, whole thing, whole suit and tie, and I had my resumes with me, and I dropped off probably about 4 applications, and the last place I went into was a Papa John's pizza place, and they were just, you know, nice, and I just straight out said, look, I know you guys are mostly hiring drivers, but I'm just looking for some inside work, answering the phones. I've worked in pizza place before, a little cleanup, maybe help make the pies, maybe, you know, fold boxes probably is what they'll wind up having me doing a lot, which I've done before, no problem. And, you know, I had another appointment over at the Kroger supermarket next door, and the manager wasn't going to be there. And I said, well, I have this other appointment, but what I'll do is I'll come back. And I went over to Kroger, and the guy I was supposed to talk to wasn't there. So I went back over to Papa John's, and the manager was there, and he saw me, and I filled out the application, and I got the job right then and there. He was looking at my resume, and he's looking at it. I said, why are you coming around here looking for work with this resume? And I said, well, and I explained to him what happened with the wife and all that, and I just said, I just need something, you know, even if it's part time, just something. And I'll be straight with you. If something better comes along, you know, I got to take it. I got to look at it after number one. You know, that's the way it is. I'm a mercenary. You have to be that way in this day and age. So, but I do need something, and so they hired me on the spot. I have an orientation class I have to go to tomorrow, which is Saturday, and I'll get that taken care of. And my friend Phyllis is lending me her car for the day, which is cool. Phyllis hasn't been feeling well. She's got a nasty case of bronchitis. And I had told her to stay home today, and she was like, no, I got to go out. She was going to this People for the American Way function they got going on here in Atlanta. When I don't have a car, it's difficult to get to some of this stuff. You know what I mean? So I just kind of stayed home today and did some housework and all that. But anyway, it was nice getting a job. It's nice knowing that that I have something to look forward to go out to, if not every day, at least 3 or 4 days a week. And it's enough to keep me. And I've got some other things going on too. Like I said, I stopped doing a bunch of the online stuff. I stopped doing that. The Monster, Atlanta Journal-Constitution, which the local newspaper has their classifieds online. I just stopped doing that completely. And because I got sick of it, I wasn't getting any decent responses. I wasn't getting any replies when I did send stuff out, you know, and a lot of the stuff just simply required college education. And I'm not going to lie about that, at least not yet anyway. And not unless I can get a fake degree. Maybe if I can swing that, they got these places that'll give you fake degrees. I bet you if you look online, but, I didn't do that. And it really, really kind of pisses me off. But you know what? Again, I really don't need a whole lot. Low overhead. And I know eventually my time will come, hopefully, for the radio show. Oh, and that reminds me, before I forget, let me thank everybody who donated for my last fundraiser. I was looking to get $600 before December 1st so I can pay the rent and utilities and the phone bill and all that stuff. And everybody came through. At the last minute, I had a little last minute. I said, please help me. Help me. And people came through. So it's really, really nice. Ben Birch of the White Rose Society in particular has been a great help. financially, and we're looking to get the White Rose Network, whatever Ben wants to call it. For my own purposes, I'm calling it the White Rose Network, where he has several radio show hosts who are syndicated. We're hoping to get that taken care of. So once that gets going, hopefully I'll be able to make money with the show. Not a lot, you know, not a lot, but enough hopefully to keep me going. And again, I don't need much, so I'd be very happy. If I could, the minimum, if you're like a union person, the minimum rate, what's the term for that? I forget the word for that. The basic rate. For even the lower end radio show hosts for union scale wages, that's it, is like $90,000 a year. And I don't know what to do with myself if I got that much money, to be perfectly honest. I'd be very happy doing this for $30,000-$35,000 a year. Very happy. More money than I've ever made in my life. Some people are like, oh my God, how do you survive? And my answer has always been, well, you know, I generally haven't, or at least as far as, you know, worried about stuff. I still have a lot of back rent to pay. But my landlord is very cool, and it's just a question of so long as I keep something coming in every month, he's okay. But I still owe a lot of back rent, and I'm trying to establish a fundraiser, not online. I've got some friends, hopefully, who can work out maybe like a house meeting of some sort where I can raise about $10,000, which is what I really need. Now, if anybody's listening out there and they know somebody who's got that kind of money and wants to invest in the Cup of Joe show, because paying the rent is frankly like paying rent on a studio for me. And plus, I'd still have enough left over to improve my equipment slightly, a little better computer, maybe a newer mixer, although my mixer is pretty good as it is. Maybe some server space, you know, things like that is what I really need. And if I can get $10,000, that would really, really save my ass. But not from you guys. I know you guys are out there and you're barely ahead of me and all that. Let me talk about this real quick because it was a story that I saw on BartCop.com. Now, you know, people have sent me condolences on the loss of my wife, and let's face it, I'm not gonna lie to you. I've had a pretty rough friggin' year and a half, the last couple of years actually. Actually, the last 3 years, I've been unemployed 2 out of the last 3 years. It's been really, really rotten for me. It was rotten for me and my wife because she was always sick, and we never really got a chance to enjoy ourselves. And then, of course, she died, and a lot of people think, oh, that's very sad, and it is very sad, and I haven't, you know, again, I'm not going to lie, it's been really, really rough, but what's really sad is that I have it a lot better than a lot of other people. I mean, I've got a place to stay, I've got my computer that I can do all these wonderful things with, I've got TV, I've got my own bathroom, I've got a laundry right here, which means I don't have to run out to a laundromat. I mean, it's really, you know, my wife would say I'm blessed. And I'm gonna talk about that in the next segment. But you know, I really don't have it as bad as some other people. Which is sickening because I'm really one step away from being homeless. If my landlord suddenly decides that's it, I gotta go, there's nothing much I can do about it, and I don't have any place to go. So you know, by all rights, I should be homeless, but I'm not. And that means I have it better than the people who are homeless. And there was a story out of BartCop about an elderly lady, and I'm not gonna say anything about the truthfulness of the story. It may be true, it may be apocryphal. Although apparently Bart knows these people and has gotten in contact with them. It was a 74-year-old lady living on a fixed income, and her income and the food stamps and what she got barely gave. Well, actually, she didn't get food stamps. She's got Social Security and SSI, which is disability, which is what my wife had applied for. And she was just barely making by, and then her water heater broke, or her water boiler. And that's the thing about when you're living in poverty, when especially if you're elderly and you really can't work and you're living on a fixed income, you can maybe get by on what you've got, but if an emergency like that happens, like in this lady's case, her water boiler blew up, that's it. Your life can be devastated. So here you have the 74-year-old woman who's not in the best of health, and she's having to heat up water and take baths in cold tubs, you know, by heating up water bit by bit. And it's a lot of work. I mean, I've had to do that before because we had our water heater busted a couple of times. The gas went out a couple of times. And I had to literally go in and, you know, just heat water up in the on the stove and take a bath that way. And it's awful. If you've never had to do that, if you've ever had to do that, you know what I'm talking about. It's just an awful, awful way to try to get yourself clean. A shower is so much more refreshing. And then while she was shopping out for groceries, the lady's car breaks down. So, and again, that's one of those situations. And a lot of people who are still in the middle class, and while the middle class is slowly being destroyed, there's still people who are out there. You know, for them, that's just an inconvenience. You get a new water heater, you get your car fixed, or you get another car, whatever. It's a pain in the butt, and it costs money that you wouldn't have otherwise. But it's still just an inconvenience. For some people, it can be complete and utter devastation. If someone's working and they rely on their car to get back and forth to work, and they're just barely getting by on their salary, and something happens to the car, you're screwed. You're just plain screwed. There's nothing you can do. And that's what really people just don't understand about being poor. And apparently, she was told to call these different charity organizations. And actually, let me go back a bit to say that the lady in the letter she had sent to Bart Cop had claimed that it used to be where if you had an emergency like that, there were organizations that you can call up and they would help you out with stuff like that for emergency situations like that. And apparently those organizations no longer exist. So here she was, stuck with that. But at any rate, it can be a real devastating loss for anybody who's living on the edge like that. And the middle class simply doesn't understand that. And she had called up some of these other charity organizations, and most of these are some of these new faith-based crap that the Bush administration people are doing. And, you know, basically they wanted her to come to church or stuff like that. And she wasn't really a churchgoer, and I don't see where you have to be required to be a churchgoer for stuff like that. But, you know, now they're getting government money, so they can get off and proselytize to people. You know, make it seem like they're being nice to you as far as the charity stuff is concerned. When the truth of the matter is, it's all proselytizing and it's all an attempt to convert you. Although, why they want people like that is beyond me. And I got nothing against private charities, mind you. I got nothing against them. But this is clearly a case of government religion, basically. Government-sponsored religion, which is supposed to be against the Constitution, but of course with the Bush people and the people he has surrounding him, that's not the case. You know, they believe that this is a Christian nation and all that stuff. And again, I'm going to talk about that in general more in the next segment. But it really, really kind of pisses me off that people have to go through this nonsense to get a little help. When there were times where the government did do a lot more just to help working people out. And the Republicans have been in charge. Well, they've been in charge of the Congress since 1994. That's 11 years now. And they've had the presidency and the vice presidency, of course. That goes with it. What am I, an idiot? But they've had basically complete and total control of the government for the last 5 years or so. And you can't imagine them doing any worse than they have. Oh, my God. It's just one of the most awful. I mean, hey, you know, this is not a partisan issue. I mean, they're, you know, these are people who are ideologically against government to begin with. But really, you know, the government plays an important role in a lot of people's lives. And I'm not arguing that it never gets corrupt. I'm not saying that it never happens and that it, too much or something can't be a bad thing. No, but they want to tear it all down. And this is some of the things that I'm talking about. And the same thing going on with the people in who were displaced in New Orleans. And the FEMA is out there, you know, cutting people off now. You know, people who have lost their homes. They've lost everything they knew. And they're living in hotels. And FEMA's saying, well, we're not having, you know, we're not paying you money to live in the hotels anymore. And they're just going to be tossed out on the street. They don't care. They don't care. They don't care about this old lady. They don't care about me. They could do it. They could give a damn about me. And it's sickening. It's just absolutely sickening that this is happening in this country. But that's what we've come to. You know, that's what we've come to. That's just the way things are nowadays. And then I was watching some sports show, and everybody was doing a little editorializing, blah, blah, blah. And they had this one a-hole get on, start talking about how, you know, there was apparently an incident somewhere where a coach had been fired because he had participated in one of those little team prayer circles that some guys do before, you know, both teams actually. And on the surface, it seems all nice. Oh, here are these guys all praying together. But you know what? And the coach was fired and all that, but he came back and he was reinstated and all. And he was saying, oh, how wonderful it is that all these people do that. But, you know, it's not so friggin' wonderful when you look at it deep down. Because what this is a form of peer pressure and intimidation by people who are weak of faith. True faith comes from within. And the type of prayer you're doing, who was it that described it? There's horizontal prayer and there's vertical prayer. And vertical prayer is between you and God. It's very private. It's direct from you to God. You're praying to God. What these guys were doing was horizontal prayer. This was prayer meant to be seen. This was prayer meant to intimidate and to convert people into their particular way of believing. That's what the prayer was. Had nothing to do with, you know, reaching out to God or talking to God, whatever you want to do in however fashion you want to do it. And I don't know how that's a good thing. Conformity like that is just wrong. Forced conformity like that is just wrong. Especially when you're talking about organized religion. And organized religion has been responsible for more death and more killing than anything else. What was it? You know, I remember seeing a comic strip many years ago. Not many. I don't know how long ago. God, I'm sounding like Mr. Kimball on Green Acres. But I saw a comic strip some years ago where... somebody was asking, why are we celebrating St. Patrick's Day? And he said, well, you know, what did St. Patrick do? Well, he brought Christianity to Ireland. And he says, well, that's it? I said, isn't it enough? Yeah, I'm certain that all the Catholics and the Protestants who have been killing each other over in Ireland since Christianity got brought over there will really appreciate it. Why they celebrate that, I have no idea. I guess, you know, from what little I know about St. Paddy's Day, it seems to be just an excuse to get drunk. And since I don't drink, I really could care less about the holiday. I've got every bit of love for the Irish. I think the Irish are great people. I love the accents and, you know, I love the passion that they bring to the world. But, you know, let me tell you, bringing Christianity to a country, to me, is not a reason to celebrate, considering how much death and destruction gets caused. I really don't know what Jesus would think about it. I'm sure he'd, as one guy said, he'd probably never stop throwing up. What is that question? Who would Jesus bomb? You know, and I think it's really sickening that people do that, because Jesus was a man of peace. I'm not a Christian. I don't call myself a Christian. I'm not, and I don't pretend otherwise. I don't believe in a lot of the supernatural BS. But from what I read, from what I know about Jesus, he was just, you know, this guy said, look, you know, just stop acting like jerks. Be nice to each other. Yeah. A lot of the stuff that you do isn't necessary. You don't have to do it. And here we are, and we celebrated Thanksgiving, and you know, it's a big Christian thing. And I'm going to speak more on this in the next segment because there's something that's been going on in the last few years. But think about this. What we did to the Indians afterwards, and from what I understand about the history, what we were celebrating was the fact that we killed a bunch of Indians. Not so much that we were celebrating the first feast, but later it became a thing where we were celebrating killing Indians. There were some incidents that went on, and they decided, screw it, let's just kill the Indians and make it easier for us. I don't know all about that, but... Anyway, let me slow down here. It's not been the greatest segment in the world. That's okay. They can't all be gems, people. But we're going to take a little break, and we're going to listen to our friends at BuzzFlash.com, and we'll have some more. Sam, play us out.
We'll be right back with more of the Papa Joe Radio Show.
Welcome back to the BuzzFlash.com GOP Hypocrite of the Week. Okay, we could have easily picked Dick Cheney this week for basically calling decorated Marine combat veteran John Murtha a traitor, but Cheney is such a chronic sleazebag and liar that it gets boring to keep dredging up his hypocrisy. It's like picking low-hanging fruit. So let's welcome Congresswoman Jean Schmidt to the infamous honor roll of GOP hypocrisy. Known by the nickname of Mean Jean in her southern Ohio district, Schmidt gained notoriety last week by calling Murtha, a fellow member of the House of Representatives, a coward for recommending the withdrawal of American troops from Iraq. She even had the audacity to quote from a former Marine Christian fundamentalist she said called her. Perhaps the former Marine was really Carl, I never put my butt on the line for this country, Rove. Or perhaps it was from Dick, I got 5 deferments to keep me out of the Vietnam War, Cheney. Or maybe it was George W., Daddy got me into the National Guard, Bush. Heck, it could have been any number of Bush administration chickenhawks. Never were so many who never served their country in combat so eager to fight so many unending wars. Schmidt claimed that she was sending a message that cowards cut and run. No, Mean Gene, cowards get up in the House of Representatives and slander Americans who really did serve their country, not like the contemptibly craven fools in the GOP who avoided putting their lives on the line. Next time you get the chance, Mean Gene, ask Dennis Hastert about his combat experience. It will be a short conversation. Because she would know sacrifice and honor if it splashed blood across her red, white, and blue matching pantsuit, Gene Schmidt is this week's BuzzFlash GOP Hypocrite of the Week. Remember our motto at BuzzFlash.com? So many Republican hypocrites. Whew, so little time. Catch up with you soon.
And we're back on the Cup of Joe radio show. I'm your not-so-humble host, Joe Vecchio, voice of the working man, voice of the radical middle, voice of those who have been unvoiced by the anti-worker policies of the Bush administration and its corporate allies. Once again, the URL for the site is cupojoe.blogspot.com, and the email address is joevec@bellsouth.net. And again, welcome to everybody listening in on the White Rose Society. My good friend Ben Birch hosting the archives there. That's whiterosesociety.org. And to all of my friends listening in on rantradio.com and on their iPods and all that stuff. And once again, thanks to everybody who donated money to help me out, and hopefully we'll continue to donate some money. I'm not going to be proud about this anymore. Just if you've got a few extra bucks, throw it in the pot, if you please. The donation place is on this site. And until I get this as a regular gig, I need all the help I can get. And again, don't spend the rent money. Don't spend money you really, really need for something. And don't spend money that you've got earmarked for other charities. Only if you can afford it, and only if it's just, you know, I don't want to say tossing away money, but money you don't really need for anything else. How's everybody doing? It's about 8 o'clock and then Friday night on, what the hell is it? It's December 2nd. And tomorrow, actually, for next show, I'm going to be interviewing a couple of local Georgia bloggers. And I hope that turns out good. Another local blogger didn't seem to think that was a good idea because he had done it before on his little podcast. But we'll see what happens here, and I'll talk about more in detail. By the way, is Gene Schmidt the scariest-looking person you ever saw in Congress? Doesn't her skin look like she's been through a fire? And maybe because it kind of just kind of wrinkles out like it's been kind of pulled too tight or has been in a fire and just misfigured. Is there something wrong with this lady? Is there something wrong with Republicans in general that they have to call decorated war veterans cowards even while they're pretending to support the troops? Is there some sort of insanity about them? I really don't know. I'm not qualified. I'm not a psychologist. It's just kind of sickening, as I said in the last segment. But Schmidt is, oh my God, she's scary. And, you know, she won against an actual Iraqi war veteran in a very, very heavily Republican district, one of those gerrymandered districts. I guess it's gerrymandered. I don't know for sure. I shouldn't be saying stuff like that. I'm not like Rush Limbaugh. I don't like to say stuff without, just off the cuff like that as far as dealing with actual facts. I don't know if it's a gerrymandered district or not, but it's a very heavily Republican district, and she barely squeaked out against Paul Hackett, who was running for the Senate now. And Hackett is the first Iraq veteran to run for office, if I'm not mistaken. I believe that's correct. Maybe I'll have him on the show one day. Who knows? We'll talk to him about his experiences in Iraq and all that other stuff. But Schmidt and the other people who are basically calling Representative John Murtha a coward because he says that, you know, the shit in Iraq is not working out and we need to get the hell out. So, anyway, I wanted to talk about this because for the last couple of years now, I've noticed every Christmas, and even sometimes not on Christmas, one of the things the right wing is now talking about is how us liberals and us secularists, whatever they want to call us at the moment, hate Christmas, and they want to get even the word Christmas taken out. And leading the charge is our crazed Irishman, Bill O'Reilly. And what's wrong with this guy? I mean, and again, talking about Schmidt, what the hell is wrong with Bill O'Reilly? What the hell has he got to be so angry about? You know, let me tell you something. I've got it a lot worse off than Bill O'Reilly. My life is a total wreck. And you know what? Even I'm not that angry. And I just don't understand what his problem is. It's kind of like it's almost comic. It's like John Cleese in Fawlty Towers. Anybody remember that show? There was a sequence where he had to get somewhere and his car wouldn't start. And he's outside of the car and he's just absolutely apoplectic, just furious. And he's screaming at the car and he's standing outside the car, screaming, "I'm going to count to three. And if you don't start, I'm going to say," and he goes, "One, two, three. That's it." And he's standing outside the car as if the car is going to turn on by itself. And then he runs off. And what's great about the shot is that they leave the shot on the camera. And he comes back with a tree branch. And he's whacking the car with a tree branch. Everybody gets mad like that from time to time. I mean, I've had my temper tantrums where I'm just, you know, throwing things and yelling and screaming. I've scared some people, too. I used to scare Kathy every now and then. But I just, you know, just I get it out of me for a few seconds, and that's it. I'm okay again. But in O'Reilly's case, he's like this all the time. And was he on Jon Stewart? And, and Jon asked him, "Why are you so angry all the time?" "Well, there's a lot of bad things in the world." And Jon was like, "Well, so, you know, what are you doing about it?" I think what John said was that you're causing it or something to that effect. But O'Reilly is going off on department stores who basically saying happy holidays instead of specifying Merry Christmas, which is so bloody ridiculous. First of all, let's get a few things clear about Christmas itself. I talked about Thanksgiving in the last segment. Let's make the truth clear about Christmas. Christmas is a stolen holiday. What it is Yule. It was a pagan tradition that the Christians couldn't stop people from doing, so what they did was they adopted it. Look in the Bible. I mean, I'm not an expert on the Bible, but I think I can say without fear of contradiction that there is absolutely nothing in the Bible that specifies the date. In fact, even if I'm not mistaken, the month December wasn't even created when Jesus was born, if I'm not mistaken. I'm not sure when the calendar, the Romans started using the calendar that they did. But there's nothing in the Bible that gives a specific date. I don't have a problem in general with them using Christmas, you know, December 25th as the day Jesus was born. And it has become a federal holiday for less reasons in Christianity than it just has been a tradition from year to year. But the reality is the origins of it come from Yule. It was a pagan holiday that the Christians couldn't stop people from worshiping. Just like Easter is the solstice, the spring solstice. I think it's the longest day of the year or something like that, or shortest day of the year. I don't really know. But the point of the matter is, it was a ceremony that pagans were celebrating that the Christians just basically adopted. And what do you think fir trees have to do with Jesus? There's not a fir tree within 1,000 miles of the Middle East. You know, that's a European thing. That's a pagan thing that goes back for a while. Or Easter with the Easter bunny. There's nothing in the Bible about an Easter bunny. Nothing about that. And, you know, St. Nick or Kris Kringle, you know, again, he was turned into a Christian figure, but he was Father Christmas. He was, you know, it goes back a long ways. So, you know, Christmas in and of itself is therefore a stolen holiday. And a lot of the other religions have their stuff going on. Then there's Hanukkah, and they got this new one, Kwanzaa, which I have absolutely no clue about. And quite frankly, I really don't care to have a clue about. I don't know I don't know how long this thing has been going on, but I really don't have much to do with it. But the point of the matter is that it's really just something that people used to celebrate every year. Basically, I guess celebrating just just being still alive in the winter, because things were really tough back then. Anybody knows anything about what life was back at that point in time? At any rate, O'Reilly just got his panties all in a knot over this, and he's furious. I mean, he's absolutely furious about it. And he's not the only one, of course, but he's the biggest cheerleader for it. And he's saying that any store that says Happy Holidays instead of Merry Christmas is insulting all Christians. You know, Bill, you're an insult to Christians. If Christians wonder, and this is what Kathy used to talk about, because she claimed to be a Christian. I don't claim to be a Christian. I never have, and I don't know if I ever will. I'm not going to say I never will. But, you know, Kathy would always say that these are the people that turn people away from Christianity, that this kind of self-righteous, I'm better than you attitude. You know, like the old lady, the one I talked about in the last segment, when she contacted some Christian organizations that she knew, as soon as they found out she was a Democrat, all of a sudden that they didn't want to have anything to do with her. You know, or the church, I forget where it was, that were they kicked out everybody that voted for John Kerry. Is that the Christianity everybody wants? You know, is that what we want from it? I was going to play that George Carlin bit about how people's attitudes about Christianity and how, you know, the whole sanctity of life thing. And he says, and he talked about how religion is the biggest cause of death. And he said, do you believe in God? No. Good. Gone. Kill you. Do you believe in God? Yes. Do you believe in my God? No. Dead. That's the way it's been, man. If you don't think it hasn't been that way, then you have no friggin' clue about history. That's the way it's been. Carlin makes it as simple as you can make it, but that's basically it. People have been killing each other over this stuff for years. For years. And whoever or whatever God is, you know, God's up there just watching, saying, man. And maybe God interferes and maybe God doesn't. Maybe I'm going to be punished just for saying this. I don't know for sure. Quite frankly, I'll repeat what I've said before. I think any creature that sentences people to eternal punishment or eternal pleasure based solely upon what their beliefs are, not upon what their actions are, isn't really somebody I want to worship. Maybe somebody you should be afraid of, but, you know, that's like the fear of the gun, you know, like the same kind of fear where a guy's holding a gun to your head and saying, do this or I'll shoot. I guess you do what you got to do. But, you know, all this stuff, it's all made-up outrage. And for O'Reilly, I'm not sure if he really feels this way or if he just... In his case, I really think he believes this. Because it's obvious that he seems to take things so personal. And that it's not really a show. Like, for some people, it's a big show. And the truth of the matter is, an atheist in this country couldn't get elected dog catcher. So I don't know where Christians get off feeling that they're persecuted. I guess they feel like if they don't have the legal right to kick the crap out of people because they're Christians and the other person isn't, then they feel like they're being persecuted. This is why they fed your asses to the lions, you know. I bet you they were just as obnoxious back in those days. And, of course, the Roman Empire eventually became Christianity, and that's, of course, when they fell. Well, it took them a while. You know, the apparatus of the empire, even though the empire itself fell, a lot of the social apparatus survived for many, many centuries afterwards. A lot of the technology that they used, the water wheels and stuff like that, although there was a kind of disintegration of a lot of it after the Christians took over, which is scary because it was the Christians who had a lot of the knowledge for many of the years, and it was only when that knowledge started to come out is when the Renaissance took place. And here I go talking history again. But, you know, I just like with Schmidt and like with the other Republicans, and you wonder what's going on in their heads. And after a while, I started thinking about that, and I just started to get crazy. And I said, look, just get him the hell out of power. Get him the hell out of office. Those that need to go to jail, send them to jail. Mr. Bush, Mr. Cheney, pretty much the whole damn administration, as far as I'm concerned, ought to be removed from power, placed under arrest, brought up on charges. War crimes in particular are big charges, but just generally screwing things up and put them on trial. And you know what? I'd be perfectly happy if Mr. Bush got to go home and spend the rest of his life living in wealth and luxury in his stupid little ranch at Crawford. I'd be perfectly happy to do that so long as he'd stop messing with our lives. And that's what these people are doing. At these at this new job that I've got, I'm wondering how many of those working guys there are Republicans. And I'm going to try like hell to avoid that situation ever coming up where I get to talk to them about it. But, you know, if it ever comes to that, if I'm put into that situation where I'm going to talk about it, I'm going to give them the old Morgan Freeman speech. And I'm going to say, I could go out there and go to a pawn shop and get you a gun and give it to you, and you can just shoot yourself because that'll be a lot quicker. Working man voting Republican. You know, I suppose you can believe any lie you want to believe about them being, you know, the party of the common man or the party of the ordinary person. And they are quite definitely not. They have done more to screw working people over than, I can't think of anybody else in this country. They've just basically worked to do that. And especially lately when they've been taken over by the religiously insane and the corporatists. I mean, it's a really, really weird combination of people that are running it. You've got the Pat Robertson group, and you've got the Grover Norquist / Richard Mellon Scaife group, you know, and they're really two different groups of people, and they're each kind of using each other. And you wonder how long that's going to last, because, you know, the corporatists are not really big on religion. They really don't care about that. They want corporate power, and that's really all their desire is. They're cheap labor Republicans. That's what they are. They're cheap labor conservatives. They want a society for them built upon the backs of working people who work and slave and pay the bulk of the taxes, while the rich people get all the benefits and make all the money and pay less of the taxes as far as an overall percentage. I think if we ever take power again, I think what we ought to now, for those of you who understand how the progressive tax works, and for those of you who don't, let me explain very, very quickly. It's where you pay more tax the more money you make. And I don't just mean in incremental stages. I mean in geometrically. For example, you make $20,000 a year. You pay X amount of taxes on that $20,000. Then you, from the next $10,000, you raise X. And I think the upper level now is like 36-37%. Whereas it used to be back in the 50s and 60s, it got as high as like 90-something percent for the very, very highest levels. And Kennedy dropped that down to something like 80% or something like that. And Reagan dropped it down to like 37%. And if you're feeling pinched, that's a big – by taxes, that's a big reason why. Because the people up on top aren't paying what they were paying. Me, I think and I discussed this on another show, and somebody else gave me the idea. And I wish I could remember who it was. I'm sorry. But – I think we ought to make the first $50,000 tax-free. The first $50,000 you own is completely tax-free. You pay no taxes on it whatsoever. And then it goes up in increments. I'd say, I think the guy was saying 5% every $10,000 above and beyond that until you reach the high point, or what was it, 1% or 2% or something like that. You pay a certain amount of tax progressively until you get to the very upper levels where you're paying. And I think, you know, for the next 20 years or so, we ought to raise the upper level to like 98% just to punish them. Just to let them know that we're pissed off that you're basically ripping us off. Because that's basically what they're doing. What was it? I just read an article about Goldman Sachs, the big bank up in New York. And they received a huge, huge tax subsidy from the city just to keep their office in New York City. And this is a company that's not doing poorly. In fact, they're doing so well, they're giving a lot of their employees, I think, was it $50,000 or was it $500,000 bonuses? They're doing very, very well. They don't need this tax subsidy. The money they'd be getting from that tax subsidy could be used to help feed and clothe a whole lot of people and heat a whole lot of people because, you know, prices of heating oil are going through the roof now. But we give all these big tax breaks to corporations, and we don't get nothing for it. And we wind up shouldering the burden. And the really sad thing about it is that there's a lot of people, a lot of working people, who just go along with it. They think that's just fine. And I don't understand that attitude. They're getting ripped off. What was that Monty Python sketch about Doug and Dinsdale Piranha? And they had the one guy, and they were asking him about his relationship. Oh, no, he was a smashing bloke. He used to buy his mother flowers and that. He was like the brother to me. But the police have film of him nailing your head to the floor. Well, yeah, he did that. You know? Well, I mean, he had to. I transgressed the unwritten law. And, you know, I said, well, what did you do? Well, he never told me that, but he gave me his word that it was a case. that's what it is. That's exactly what it is. He was a cruel man, but fair. Oh, my own. Just go out and get yourselves a gun, people, and shoot yourselves if you're a Republican or a working man, especially if you're a black man voting Republican or a gay person voting Republican. Just go out and get a gun and shoot yourself or throw yourself off a roof or jump in front of a railroad track. Just kill yourself because you know what? It'll be a lot quicker. You're voting for people who are essentially slitting your throat and robbing you and picking your pocket. Yeah, the Democrats got some problems too, but you know what? We can fix the problems in the Democratic Party, and we're going to fix those problems. And maybe the Republicans can be fixed in the long run too, because there is a reason for conservatism, even though conservatism is always on the wrong side of the story every single time. It was the conservatives in this country, after all, who would have preferred to have remained a British colony, right? It was the revolutionaries who were liberal in that sense, who were progressive in that sense, always on the wrong side. It was the conservatives who were all for maintaining the inequality in the South. And yeah, it was a Democratic Party, sure, but you look at the Southern Democrats, the Dixiecrats, those are the ones that were all for maintaining the status quo. They were the conservative Democrats. They were only liberal because, you know, that was what the way things were then. But they were only liberal in name only in a lot of places. They didn't like a lot of this. Oh, they loved the Tennessee Valley Authority and the rural electrification. But when it came to the government saying, you know, black people had to be free and equal, they didn't want no part of that. How do you think the Confederate flag got on the Georgia state flag to begin with? That was put in, what, 56, 57? In direct response to the federal government saying you got to desegregate the schools. You got to desegregate them. And the Southerners said, nope, we don't want to do it. And we're going to show our state pride by putting this racist symbol on our flag. And it took until the 90s to get it off. It's a sick world. And I wish I had more answers. And I wish I could think of something to say for the next minute and a half or so. But at any rate, let me just say a few thanks again to Bob Kincaid from Hit On Radio and to Ben Birch at the White Rose Society. To everybody who helped me out with a little bit of money. And again, don't be shy. If you got a couple of bucks, toss it in the pot. I'm not proud or rich. And hopefully, pretty soon it won't be necessary at all to do that. Anyway, until next show, I'm going to put an end to it here. Until next show, this is Joe Vecchio from the Cup of Joe Radio Show, signing off for this time. Until next time, I'll see you then. Bye.
Joe, I crave a plate of Dave, open a jar of John, don't put anything on, I'll chug a jug of George, I'll sip a mug of Doug, with a creamer of Steve, how many more does that leave? Give me a pot of Scott, heat up a pan of Stan, throw in a handful of Dick, that'll do everything, open a can of Dan, make a meal of Sam, but don't give me no mug, cause what I really want's a cup of Joe.
The Cup of Joe radio show has been recorded live at the fabulous Studio Al in Decatur, Georgia, and has been produced by Jove Enterprises, Incorporated. Joe Vecchio, the host of the Cup of Joe radio show, is a production of Mr. and Mrs. Vecchio of Brooklyn, New York.
A plate of Dave, creamer of Steve, a mug of Doug, a cup of...